Welcome to La Liga Weekly. And let's start by immediately breaching the terms of our agreement, talking about the Copa del Rey and why this guy isn't getting pushed aside by anyone else anytime soon. And at that point, he starts his own round of applause. Yes, congratulations to Real Sociedad and their coach, Jimeno Alguacil, holders of the Copa del Rey for the next 2 weeks. Now then, who is going to win La Liga? Apparently, it's news to some people, Gary Lineker, that there's a title race. Of course, it's not news if you've been paying attention to Atletico over the last couple of months. You're not in a relegation battle. What are you clinging on to? By contrast, Barca's form is imperious, if you include a 1-0 win over 10 months by Valladolid in your definition of imperious. Real Madrid never go away and will be top on Saturday night if they win the Clásico. Elsewhere, Abelardo has been put out of his Alavés misery. We'll see you next season. There must be some other schmuck you can relegate. Now, am I a dinosaur? Because I find it baffling that, I don't know, half of all goals are now scored as a result of defenders mistaking themselves for Johan Cruyff. You play for Alavés, mate. What are you messing about for in there? And you also play for Alavés. 3-0 down with 20 minutes gone, and Abelardo is there with his head in his hands, exuding the "who's in charge of these idiots" energy. The answer is somebody else. Now, there's news of an Oscar nomination for Marc Cucurella, although maybe not, because he was actually smiling as he pretended to roll around in agony. There were some goals from our popular La Liga strikers. Iago Aspas back on the score sheet, a Gerard Moreno hat-trick, and a double from a new contender, Rafa Mir, as Huesca gave themselves fresh hope of survival. All right, messing around aside, of course, we will be discussing the racism row after Valencia's players left the field after Mukhtar Diakabi allegedly was racially abused by Cadiz's Juan Cala. We will get to that. It's a complicated situation. Well, there are some very straightforward bits about it. I think you support your mates, and I think the Valencia players did the right thing initially. Complicated bits come as to what La Liga's response will be and how you prove it. But we'll first of all discuss the football. Should we start with the Copa? Terry, I know it's slightly breaking the rules of La Liga Weekly, isn't it? But obviously. We all knew beforehand. The whole thing was delayed for a year to get the fans in. We didn't get the fans in. I mean, I think we learned why it would have been nice to have got the fans in, because it would have been a better occasion, wasn't it? But it's hard to take it away from, to take any of the joy, the congratulations away from Real Sociedad, because they worked hard for it over the last couple of seasons. Alguacil showed it, you know, heart on his sleeve. It was funny, and it was lovely to see.
It was funny. It was awkward, but it was it was great to see. I mean, it was good to see someone different win a trophy as well. And Real Sociedad over the last couple of seasons are worthy of winning a trophy. The football they've played, I think over the last couple of seasons, they've proved to be a better team than Athletic Club. But this was, I have to be honest, slightly disappointing final. I don't think we had enough chances, enough shots at goal. It started off brightly. It started off at a really fast pace. It was great to see, you know, an all Basque final, to see so many Basque players, to see so many youth products coming through the two systems. It's, you know, it gets complicated when you have Alex Ramirez at Real Sociedad who come through Athletics. You have Inigo Martinez who playing for Athletic who come through the youth system at Real Sociedad. So that, it was a great occasion. Disappointing, of course, that there was no fans in the stadium. And I have to say, it was a slightly, the second half becomes scrappy. And it was quite a sad way, I think, for the final to be decided. So you got, on one hand, you got Real Sociedad taking, you know, rightly, the pride of winning the Copa del Rey. Athletic Club, narrow defeat, slightly contentious penalty, I thought. And I was slightly bewildered by the decision of the VAR when, I'm not convinced it was a penalty. I think it was a close call. I wouldn't say it was a horrendously bad decision. It was a close call. But I was baffled by the decision to overturn the red to a yellow.
Yeah. Because
it's a foul. I think it's a sending off. If he doesn't think it's a foul, then it's no penalty.
The VAR has come in and said he is trying to win the ball. So therefore, under the no triple jeopardy. Because they've already got the penalty.
Yes, yeah.
So they've already, and then they get the goal. So in a sense, as long as you're trying to make a tackle, and I guess that's what the VAR has said. He said, have a look at that again, because I think he's genuinely trying to win the ball.
To win the ball.
Is he? Is the question.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah. But we see that so many times, though, don't we? We still see the last player going through, he's trying to win the ball. Well, you know, I mean, there are obvious ones where you're just bringing someone down. But not often. If you're still always genuinely, you can make a claim that you're the player trying, you know, you're trying to a last ditch tackle to win the ball back. Yeah. So I thought it was close. I thought Paul too did look for contact and found it. So it was, you know, on one hand, you got the delighted team, on one hand, the disappointed team. I thought it was a final play with good sportsmanship as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Jane in particular, at the end of the game, when, I mean, all the Athletic players stayed out to watch the presentation ceremony. It took a while. Yarramendi hobbled up the steps in great pain as well, wasn't it? It had to be helped up, helped back down. Admirable for Ralph Sussman to pick him, but it's probably put him out another couple of weeks.
Yeah. And it's a lonely looking ceremony as well, isn't it? Just, because the fist bump in
the King of Spain.
Yeah. And so, and then just one guy walking up on his own and all that.
And then, you know, Mignon stayed out longer than his teammates as well to give his congratulations. So that's why it's a shame there wasn't 60,000 supporters in there.
Yeah.
We did see some incidents in Bilbao before the game. With the
did supporters. You see the guy jumping off?
Off the traffic lights.
Yeah, and thinking that his mates would catch him. And nobody did.
And they parted. Yeah, they parted.
They let him hit the ground. On the concrete. Oh, I hope he's all right, that guy. But he's famous.
Yeah. So it was. So it'd have been great to have seen all the supporters in. And they 350 day delay on that final.
Yeah.
And then you've got the weird scenario where a different manager of Athletic Club than the one Garitano, David Silva, has won numerous trophies in the same season for different clubs. Yeah. And that was his first game he played in the Copa del Rey for Real Sociedad and didn't last the 90 minutes. It was weird. I mean, it's but it is, we are in a weird, slightly weird time, aren't we, in terms of fixture congestion, scheduling of fixtures, and they waited as long as they could. We've got the other one in 2 weeks in the same stadium, and Athletic can have another go. So I thought they were unlucky. I thought it was very little between the two teams, and it's just a shame when it's decided on a contentious, dubious penalty decision. But I think Real Sociedad, you know, it's great to see someone different win a major competition in Spanish football. And it is as well. When you see the delight, you know, of winning a cup competition from Real Sociedad, it says a lot for how far the Copa del Rey has come in the last 10, 15 years.
I think for all football, isn't it? I think one of the, because we're debating at the moment the change of format of the Champions League. We have it in all the big leagues. They're all, the danger is that they're all dominated by the same couple of clubs, isn't it? The ones with the more moneyed ones with a bigger fan base, and then one causes the other and they spiral away in this moneyed age from the other clubs, and it's a real danger, isn't it, that we make football boring, and then you get the pressure to make it even more boring by just having the top European clubs play each other all the time and we cut the rest out. So seeing a team like Real Sociedad or a final like this, as you say, with you know a team and a half of Basque players, it's brilliant, isn't it, to see.
And the importance of actually winning something as opposed to being in the top four.
Yeah.
You know, I think that shouldn't be underestimated, and it is. You know, you hear people banging on all the time about, oh, I'd rather be in the top four and get the Champions League than the FA Cup or win the Copa del Rey. You know, I was lucky enough to play for 14 years and I've got one trophy and I'm eternally grateful for that. I'm sure I finished in the top four. But I can't remember it. It didn't register.
Yeah, you can't remember all your league finishes.
It'd have been nice to have finished runners up. You might have got a medal for the league title or something there, but I didn't. And I can't remember, you know, what position I finished. They just blur into one big stat. But the one that sticks out is when you've won something. And the Real Sociedad players, you know, should be proud of what they've achieved. It's a fantastic achievement.
Now, then, who's going to win the league is the next question. So, on Friday for the Patreons, oh, by the way, welcome to our new patrons. I should have named you. So we've got a couple of new patrons. So welcome along. So, sorry. So patreon.com/LTEL. And then you can join in, and we have extra stuff, basically. And we talk behind your backs about the podcast listeners when you're not there. and so we were discussing who's going to win the league, basically. You did the points for the bottom end. I did the points for the top end. I had Barca winning by a point, and I had Atleti getting a point against Sevilla. So it's bad that they didn't. So they lost by a 0-0. Barcelona won their game by a 0-0. Real Madrid relatively comfortably breezed past Eibar, I thought. When are we talking? Saturday now, aren't we?
Yes,
Saturday. Yeah. So obviously it's a bad weekend for Atleti. There's no way round it. Where do you want to start? Should we do Real Madrid first?
Yeah.
Not quite as much to say, which
no.
is very much a way of saying that they're very definitely in with a chance of winning the league, because there's not been a lot to say about their league performances. They've just got there, they've done the job.
Just keep winning.
Yeah.
Benzema just keeps scoring.
Yeah.
I think the brightest point about the game at the weekend was Asensio, showing his continuing return to form, because Benzema is desperate for someone up there alongside him, playing in the attacking third of the pitch to complement what he's been doing single-handedly, which is carrying the attack around Madrid. So I think Asensio being fit now and playing better is a massive lift for Real Madrid. Much debate. Actually, there is a talking point. I've seen the three at the back. The graphic comes up on television. It comes up in every newspaper article I've read.
Yeah.
And it was a back four.
Right. Okay.
Why do we do that in sport in football? Because one person says, and everyone follows suit. And I trust me, I've had the time to watch it over again.
Yeah.
Because I was watching it at the start and thinking, that's not a back three.
Yeah.
I convinced myself by going back and watching it again.
Yeah. I'll have a look on it.
Not in its entirety, of course, but watching it bit by bit, different sections of the game, and just coming to the conclusion that I know what I'm recognising, that the centre-backs, Nacho and Militao, are not playing where they should if they're playing in a back three. Vasquez was playing as an orthodox right back, but Asensio was playing ahead of him, so there was space for him to push forward, whereas Mundi couldn't push forward because Marcelo was ahead of him and stayed wide.
Right. Yeah.
And I kept searching for this back three, and every graphic I've seen, newspaper reports, team lineups everywhere is described as a back three. And I've heard people talking about the effectiveness of Zidane playing with a back three. And I'm thinking, please, why do we, that's basically what we get paid for, to analyse games. And if we don't do it properly, then, why?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing?
Right. So here we are then. So this is So there we are for the Patreon. So we'll have to explain this for the podcast listeners, because they can't see. You explain it, Terry.
It's got there. It kind of looks like a back three, but a normal back three, six Nacho would be central, 23 Mundi would be more narrow.
Yeah, but where
is further across into a left-sided centre-back position of a three?
Yeah,
which is the way the graphic is set up.
It's as classic a left-back position as you can see there, isn't it?
And Marcelo is wide left ahead of him.
Yeah,
and
classic
there was
left midfield. Yeah,
no need for Mundi to overlap.
Yeah,
Vasquez, on the other hand, as a right-back, you can see number 11 Marco Asensio, who was ahead of him, played infield.
Yeah.
And I thought, if anything, it was a back four. And you can see, look at Modric and Casemiro are on top of each other.
Yeah,
they were the two pivot players in midfield. This is how I saw it. A back four, those two sitting. Casemiro is actually more attacking than Modric, but understandable because Casemiro has been amongst the goals this year. But in general, they sat. And then in front of them, you had Marcelo on the left, Isco playing off of Benzema. and Marco Asensio playing narrow on the right hand side. So for me, it was I could see it before the graphic that we're seeing, mm-hmm. kind of describes it as a 4-2-3-1. Because somewhere put a graphic up of three at the back, everybody has stuck to it. So this is my talking point from this game. Eibar were awful. Real Madrid were good. And as I said, Asensio in particular looks brighter, and that's a real positive for Real Madrid. And they got the job done. You know, goals disallowed, but they still won it comfortably. And, you know, it was a comprehensive display. And what it shows from Real Madrid is they just keep winning games somehow. You know, and you know, they find a way to win. And by and large, that's been down to Benzema. That was the talking point from this game, was just out of an interest from, you know, someone who is, you know, an analyst that watches games of football. Why do we just, people will ask me in interviews, what do you think about the three at the back? And I'm going to have to come back with this argument that it weren't.
Yeah, good. People like that. I think they appreciate that. I remember the discussion that you and Sid Lowe had on Viva La Liga, I think it was, on La Liga TV early this season, where everyone was talking about Barcelona's formation, and you basically said this they weren't doing what everyone was saying at the time. They just weren't. And I remember he said thank you, because someone actually said it and explained it, and said, you know, just because of what they print in the paper. Because what happens in reality, we all get the team sheets and we all say, oh, right, okay, what are they going to do here? And the TV, you have to do it there and then, don't you? Because they're going to do the graphics. So as soon as the team sheet, you don't get enough time with the team sheet, is part of the truth. So they give it to you like an hour and a quarter before kickoff. You've got to get that round the world. You've got the graphics drawn up and everything. And so it's basically, okay, so he'll go there, he'll go there, he'll go there. And you basically guess. But then, because someone's had a guess, which is fair enough. Forever.
That's fair enough. You have to guess.
Yeah.
But that's fair enough. But then the job of everybody else is to actually...
Mendy's not a centre-back. Look at him. He is...
And Marcelo didn't play anywhere near the wing-back position.
Yeah.
Didn't play anywhere near it. Mm. He played high up the pitch. He stayed wide. He, in my opinion, was one of the three that was playing behind Benzema. It was classic 4-2-3-1, But because it was on that graphic by the television company, and this is not a criticism, because you have to guess, and it would be fair to guess that and think, well, Mondi and Marcelo are playing. Yeah. They could be playing a three at the back. Fine. But then, you know, we have to then analyse it and form our own opinion on what they are actually playing. And no one ever asked the manager, was you playing a three at the back or was you playing a four?
Managers get prickly about it, so they can't complain about that, I think, because I remember your old mate Tony Pulis. Someone asked him, Nuno, the Wolves manager. Someone asked him a relatively harmless question about his wing backs, and he right old pop at him. He's like, "What do you know?" They asked you a question, and yet they also get. Managers get prickly if all the chat is about the fluff around the game, which it generally is too much, I think, in England, isn't it? It's the personalities, who's falling out with him, who's moving where. I think people like the analysis, but you try and talk to a coach about the analysis, the detail side, and they get, don't you dare criticise me.
Ridiculous. And it's not criticism. It's a fact that what was your intention? Was you a three? Was you a four at the back? But no one ever says that. And now we just move on to the next game. That game against Eibar is not significant. Comfortable win. And we move on. And we'll see when they play Liverpool, whether they, you know, it's possible they could play three at the back. I mean, Varane didn't play. He could come in. Nacho, Militao could form a three at the back. We'll wait and see. But in that particular game, the graphic came up and everybody has stuck to it since. And in my opinion, you know, we should be able to make our own mind up. Some teams are more difficult than others. Hmm. I'm guessing the next team that we talk about are falling into that category.
So do you mean Atletico Madrid? Yeah. Okay, well, let's do that. Obviously, the big game of the weekend. Hugely important game. They've got two difficult away games back-to-back, haven't they? Sevilla and Betis. Away games back-to-back. Needed some points from them. They failed in the first occasion. So Sevilla won the game 1-0. Acuna, nicely taken goal. Let's deal with the handball.
Yeah.
I'm relaxed about the fact that there was a potential handball, because I think it was 46 seconds or something. Atleti pulled everyone back really, really deep. It wasn't that there was a handball, the game got ragged and they scored a goal.
Atletico pulled everyone back.
If he could give them all gloves and have them all stand in the penalty area, he would. So Sevilla had another huge phase, 30-odd seconds of possession, and then they cut through them. So it wasn't, the handball wasn't, it was too far back to get VAR involved.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
I was glad it wasn't disallowed, because then where do you draw the line on how far you go back on in terms of a goal being scored? So I don't think it had any impact on why Sevilla scored the goal. It was on the other side of the pitch as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? It was being cleared on the right back side for Atletico Madrid, and the goal eventually comes down. The cross from Navas is on the left back side of Atletico Madrid. So, yeah, no, I was pleased, not because I support Atletico, Sevilla, or Barcelona, or Real Madrid, but in terms of the football world, I was pleased that they didn't go all the way back, because, you know, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
So I think it was a legitimate goal. And when we talk about the three at the back and the four at the back, Simeone gave the three at the back 30 minutes and then dumped poor old Glossy off the Sevilla, off the Sanchez-Pizjuan, who just, you know, to walk trudgingly around behind the goal. So I would be critical and say Simeone could do without Angel Correa. It must be a lucky mascot or superstition, because he leaves Correa on the bench and could only sit there and fester for 30 minutes while Correa wasn't playing. Took Lodi off and put Correa on and changed the system and went four at the back. So there's something amiss there. I mean, I'm not sure if Lodi was injured. I don't think he was. It's not an unusual change for Simeone to do. So in terms of bringing Lodi off, he's quite an easy target. Getting Correa on is something that Simeone likes to do. But it was quite significant after 30 minutes for, as a manager, to admit we've got this wrong, got this totally wrong. Or the player I picked, I've got wrong because he's having a stinker, which he wasn't. So that was a clear change of tactics to go to a back four, and Hermoso at left back, and then he changes again and again and again after the game. It's so confusing. And that for Atletico Madrid, the first half of any game they play, I think Richard tweeted me as well and said, I've been banging on about this for a while. The first half of any game for Atletico Madrid now is just, oh, let's set up. Don't give away anything. Mm. We're not going to attack hardly, but we're going to try and get to halftime and have a look at them, see what they're doing, and then we'll take it from there in the second half. And that seems to happen in every single game that Atletico Madrid have played in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah,
they waste half of football, and then they go behind, and then they're chasing it, and then we start to see them liven up a little bit more, to the extent they're struggling to score goals. Suarez is, you know, I'm baffled by the decision to dump the idea of Marco Llorente playing as a striker.
Yeah,
that's totally gone now, particularly at the weekend when you had no João Felix. He decided to leave Correa on the bench. And then I think the obvious, you know, Dembele was not in the squad as well. So they did have, you know, important players missing. But I think that we've stopped seeing Simeone use Marco Llorente as he could be the ideal partner for Suarez.
Yeah,
you know, Suarez doesn't give you. For the legs, you know, running around. And now if you're Koundé and Carlos at the weekend, Suarez isn't running in behind. When he does get the ball played up to him, his teammates are miles away from him, and it becomes easy to stifle Atletico Madrid. It's going to be a problem against Betis, because Suarez and Llorente are both suspended. Two big losses. So Simeone will be hoping that one or two of the other players that were missing at the weekend are available again. They do have a week to prepare, and I expect to see similar tactics from Atletico next week against Betis. They'll be cautious, don't risk anything. Yeah. Hope at the best to maybe nick a goal, but at the worst, get to half-time at 0-0. They're not going out to win this league.
And they're paying the
consequences now.
Yeah, because you think, right, so if you offered him, you know, people say, what would you sign up for before the game? With Simeone, I think if you offered him a 0-0 draw away to Betis, he'd take it. And if you went through every game of the rest of the season and offered him a number of points, were you happy with a point here? Are you happy with a point here? He wouldn't ask for enough points to win the league. you know, at every stage. Yeah. He'd be happy with a draw that one, we'll draw that one. And he said, well, okay, you're not going to win the league if you draw all these games, because Barcelona and Real Madrid keep winning. 1-0. Yeah, yeah.
Or a 1-0 win. That's the aim, I think. Yeah.
But
and he's not, then this Atletico are not good enough to defend clean sheet after clean sheet after clean sheet. We're seeing that.
Yeah,
you know, they're good, don't get me wrong, but they're not the team that can that can sit there and plan that, right, we're going to keep another clean sheet. Sevilla had 12 shots in the first half against Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
And there was more of an even contest in the second half, but in the first half, 12 shots and a goal. That's, you know, that's not a typical Atletico Madrid performance. No. So they're not good enough defensively.
So Barcelona, as I was saying, you know, there were the form, if you look on paper, is glittering. The performance really wasn't glittering against Valladolid in the Monday night game. But they got their dodgy red card, wasn't it?
Yes. I thought it was at first.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly it wasn't. I think, if anything, Bruno left his leg in, didn't he, on Dembele when he went crashing down after the challenge, and then made sure he caught his head with his knee. That was the naughty part of that challenge. But, you know, it clearly wasn't, I didn't think, a red card. And I thought it was a given that VAR would look at it and change the decision.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. And it had an impact on the game because it does help Barcelona to play in the last few minutes of the game against 10 men. And Barca were poor, wasteful in front of the goal, lots of opportunities, weren't efficient enough. And I thought Valladolid were terrific. I really did, because they didn't come with the usual plan, did they? Of just parking the bus and sitting there hoping and waiting. They had some menace in attack. They had loads of players missing through injury, suspension, coronavirus, and I thought they deserved the point. I have to be honest, and it was, you know, they should have beaten Sevilla in the last game when Bono got the last minute equaliser. They probably should have got something from this game against Barcelona and defeated. Ultimately, by an 89th minute goal from Dembele, those points could be crucial for Valladolid, but the 3 points were crucial in this case for Barcelona. And Koeman was just chucking everything at it in the end. No idea. We can't talk about systems with Barcelona. I think he made the right decision after about just before the 40 minute mark when he moved Frankie de Jong into midfield. And then we saw in the second half he played there the whole time. And I think that was a wise choice by Koeman. They didn't need the three at the back. And they were missing De Jong's influence in midfield. And in particular, attacking midfield. So I thought that was something that Koeman did well. I thought Messi was below par. The 2 week break didn't look as if it had helped him, to be honest.
Yeah.
So they need him to find his rhythm again quickly. Similar to what we saw at the start of the season, when he's put his form was in and out, he wasn't able to beat players as easily as he has been in the last few months. So they'll be hoping that was the game that Messi gets under his belt. But they've got another week to prepare for the Clásico. They might be better, Barcelona, playing every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, well, it would seem to be. We always talk about Messi resting, don't we? And then you give him a rest. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't exactly disastrous, was he? But yeah, you're right. It wasn't sparkling. So the weekend, obviously Saturday night, isn't it? The big game, the Clásico.
Yeah.
How will Barca set up, do you think? Where will we see De Jong in midfield, or will he be deeper?
I don't know. I can't wait to see. I think that Pique was close to this match as well. But I think it was they refrained from putting him back in again too quickly.
Yeah, but bringing back in, so they brought him back in for PSG, didn't they?
PSG.
Mbappe, and it was, it wasn't all down to him that night, but to bring him back in for the Clásico, I know the temptation is to do that with your big personalities, isn't it? But you are also a 30-odd-year-old player who hasn't played for a while.
And I think also Raúl coming back into the team. I mean, there was no need for that change other than just to get him back playing again. So he's an important player. So he comes into the reckoning for playing in the Clásico. I think that was by design last night. Then he got some minutes under his belt, another week's training. So I expect to see him playing. Will they play three at the back? Will they play four at the back? My guess is they probably go four at the back. because if it is just Benzema up front, then, you know, the three at the back sometimes can be wasteful when you've got, you know, three central defenders. I know De Jong comes out the back and plays, but it'd be interesting to see how Koeman sees it tactically.
Yeah.
But De Jong is, I think, a miss in midfield. Dembele continues to both ends of the spectrum, isn't he? He's always involved in the game. He can be wasteful, but, you know, he came up with the winning goal. He looked the most likely player to score for Barcelona, if I'm being honest. And he's improving in that center, more central position. Ironically, he scores when he's playing wide on the left, attacking across from the other side of the pitch. With a, at first, I thought it was a scruffy finish, but it wasn't. It was a finish of good quality, struck it well. So I thought Valladolid were going to hold on for the draw. I thought it was one of those nights when they were going to see the job through. But we saw, you know, Barcelona fight to the very end, just about nicked the win, and, you know, continue to fight against Atletico Madrid. Pedri was good, again. Rested for 15 minutes or so. But that's not going to make much difference in the grand scheme of things. But he's so important that you can't leave him out. So it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see the week that Koeman has with his team, to what system they come up with against Real Madrid. I think Dembele definitely plays as a central striker. Griezmann was pretty ineffective in that game last night. So it'd be interesting to see whether he starts the game. So it's one of those things that, you know, we can look forward to in the week ahead. Of course, with Real Madrid playing Liverpool as well. We don't know what's going to happen with you know, the outcome of that game in terms of players fit and available. But for Barcelona, it's a week's preparation. The draw will be in the Champions League, of course. But I'm intrigued to see what Koeman does next week, because he does change. It's not set in stone, the three at the back.
Yeah.
You know, he does have, he's fluent enough to, and his team are, to go with a four again. But they need to play a lot better than what we saw last night. Strange that we saw them being, you know, playing so well prior to the international break. That fantastic, fabulous performance against Real Sociedad. And then they were, you know, they struggled big time last night to break down Valladolid.
So let's go down the bottom end of the league, shall we? Because very good weekend for Huesca, who won away to Levante. I was saying, it was Thursday when we did that, look at forward to the end of the season with the Patreons, yeah. And I was saying that Levante is the game. It's almost the pivotal game, isn't it? Because you just don't know what you're going to get from Levante. They are beatable, as Huesca showed. So Rafa Mir, beautiful finish for the second goal. So a win for Huesca, who were bottom. Osasuna, Etafe, unsurprising, the least surprising result of the weekend. Yeah, 0-0. Elche, useful point against Betis. Mir after the Borja Iglesias penalty. Cadiz got a win in that game against Valencia. We'll deal with the racism aspect in a bit, but, you know, on the pitch, very, very useful points then for Cadiz. And Alaves, shall we start there? What an absolute shambles over 20 minutes for Alaves. It was no surprise. When you see a coach with his head in his hands on the sideline, you're thinking, you know, I know they've already sacked a coach already this season, but the three stop strategy almost never works for a football club. But they were just awful, weren't they, in that opening spell.
I must admit, I expected the news sooner than yesterday. Yeah. But they obviously were working on bringing Javier Kayeka in.
Yeah.
And Abelardo has gone. It's a shame, because we know what he did at Alaves before when he kept them up. He struggled last year at Espanyol, got the sack in similar circumstances, and his team they've been dire. They've been woeful since he took over. This issue with Lucas Perez is ongoing, not even in the squad at the weekend, which is just being daft. I don't know what's going on there. So it does mean that he's paid with the loss of his job. You're right about the players at Alaves. No confidence, the lack quality at the back. So who on earth is asking them to, you know, Pacheco to chip the ball out to Lejeune? He's got his back. He's facing his own goal, and he's like, he does it. It's half-heartedly. I understand Lejeune not wanting the ball, so he's not really making a great angle, because he's thinking, we're rubbish, I'm playing poor, we're getting beat every game. I don't really want my goalkeeper to chip me a pass out here, and I've got to deal with it when, you know, Celta Vigo are closing me down. Chaco plays it to him. Lejeune makes a mess. Before you know it, 1-0. Before you know it, 2-0, 3-0. It was a disaster. I'm not an advocate for sacking managers, but I think in this case, it had to be done. They've got no chance playing as they are in the style that they're playing with that manager. So it was inevitable that over the weekend he was going to lose his job. So interesting choice, because Kayeka likes to play football as well, doesn't he? He hasn't got reputation yet of fighting his way out of a relegation battle. Being a pragmatic manager, making sure we're first and foremost we're hard to beat. So it's going to be an interesting choice to see how he adapts to the players he has out of his.
Because when he was first at Villarreal, they were shambolic, weren't they? They were a mess at times, and he got better. He got back. Yeah, that weird.
He got the sack, and 6 weeks later reinstated. Yeah.
And then he did better second time round. I thought in time he seemed to get his ideas over, or he learned.
At Villarreal.
Yeah, yeah.
Not but, none of his.
Yeah, in the middle of when you're bottom of the league with a few games to play. Yeah.
So I think it's a risky choice.
Yeah.
You know, often we see the same managers going around, don't you, that get a reputation for digging a team out of trouble. Kayeka hasn't had that opportunity yet. See how he embraces it.
Obviously, the racism row was a big story of the weekend. We can't ignore it. It's a big issue for La Liga. It's a big issue in sport, life and everything else. So we are not going to offer any kind of unique perspective on this. We're a couple of white men. So I personally applauded the Valencia players when they walked off in support of Dia Cabi. Some things are easy in this. If a crowd is chanting racist abuse, then the authorities take action. Although their record on that is actually pitiful, I would say, particularly UEFA. But it's much harder to deal with an allegation between two people when there's no corroborating evidence of this. Kalla is entitled to defend himself. You know, he says he isn't guilty. He's going to talk later. I also think Cadiz are within their... I think they're probably doing the right thing to defend their guy until they've spoken to him, until they know what's going on. But I don't think that the evidence bar should be that high for supporting and believing Dia Cabi. If your friend comes to you and says, I was racially abused today, your reaction is not to say, where's the evidence? I'm not going to believe you until you prove it to me. Your reaction is to believe them and to support them and to say, right, what are we doing? You know, you tell me what you want from this. When you look at Dia Cabi's reaction, it was all, he's not doing anything cynical there. He's definitely not doing anything cynical. It's an emotional outburst. So he definitely feels he was racially abused. 100% accept that, believe that. Kalla's entitled to his defence, because the defence, we'll see what he says. The defence could be, he misunderstood me. It was just some standard insult. He must have heard a word wrong. There's a defence to be made there. But it's interesting that it raises the stakes, isn't it? Because we're long past the days when black players just have to suck it up and say, oh, well, get on with it, mate. I don't know what La Liga would have done if Valencia had refused to come back out again. It would have really pushed it into La Liga's court. I'm not sure there is a protocol. I don't know what the plan is if a team walks off as they're entitled to do. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? It's not an easy one, Terry, is it? When you look at the same issue happens in wider society, where it's straightforward, you come down hard, where a guy defends himself, as Juan Kalla does, it is much more difficult, isn't it? Because a guy's entitled to defend himself. Whereas, also, like I say, I think the right thing to do, stick by your mate. In Dia Cabi's case, you walk off. If he walks off, you walk off with him and you stay off with him. But that would be my view.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we're not going to offer anything profound. I think it will be, generally agreeable that, until we do, as you make a really good point, if it's the supporters doing it, everyone can hear it, everyone can witness it. And I agree with you totally that UEFA, FIFA don't come down hard enough on that. I think the whole thing is a real shame as well. I think it, being a black player playing in La Liga as in the past was difficult. But thankfully, over the last 10, 15 years, possibly, supporters are better. And we haven't had too many incidents like this, if any, I can't recollect. This is the first big one, isn't it, where a player has made the accusation, feels he's been racially abused. His teammates have walked off. The debate is then, you know, should Valencia have stuck to their guns and stayed and not come back out? I mean, it has an effect on the game because Diakabi doesn't come back out and play again. And then Carla does and then goes off at half-time. So, you know, and I agree with you with the point that, until we hear Carla speak, give his side of it, it's almost an impossible situation, John, unless there's witnesses, unless someone heard it. But even then, if it's a Valencia player that's backing up Diakabi, does that count? Because then a Cadiz player might back up Carla and say he heard what happened, and that's not true. I think a similar thing is happening with Slavia Prague and Rangers. That situation is very similar, but the one where the Slavia Prague player put his hand over his mouth. But again, it's hard to prove. What you're gonna get, you're gonna need the referee to be within earshot of everything, because he's gonna be the only neutral in these situations, and it doesn't appear that he heard anything. I hope there's the cameras and the microphones in an empty stadium may have picked up what happened between the two players. So on one hand, if Diakabi feels he has been abused by Carla, you can understand the reaction. On the other hand, if you're Carla, then the accusation is severe. It tarnishes his reputation, and you're quite right that he feels, if he is innocent, then he has to defend himself.
So I think we'll leave it there. That's probably the best that we can do. As I say, I applauded them when they backed up their mates. I think that's what you do, isn't it? If someone comes and says to you, and I
think, do you think they should have stayed off?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, we don't know. There's a lot of he said stuff going on about how they ended up coming back out, isn't there? But so we don't know that. So it's hard. But I thought they did the right thing. I applauded them when they went off. And if they'd stayed off, it would have pushed it into La Liga's lawyers' court, to decide what to do with it, which would have been an interesting one. It would have pushed it on. I think it's a good thing to do. It's an unsavoury situation, but the fact that we are talking about it, the fact that they made, in inverted commas, a fuss about it, is a good thing. No one expects you to suck it up anymore. It's made a thing of it. And if it makes a player, whether Calo did it or not, it makes future players think twice about using a racial insult in whatever circumstances, then it's a good thing. And, like I say, Valencia did the right thing initially to back up their mate, and that's probably as much as we can offer. Right, so we will be back. Obviously, there's huge games coming up in Europe in the week. Real Madrid against Liverpool. Then there's the Basque Derby Wednesday night in La Liga. And then Europa League, obviously, Granada against Manchester United is the highlight of that one. So we'll be back for Patreons and have another podcast next week. So we'll see you all then. Thanks a lot.